Welcome to the Speaking Your Lingo podcast, where my goal is to help this generation think well. My name is Shane Lingo, and today you're listening to part two of a series that I'm calling The Human Element, Biographical Perspectives. On today's episode, we're continuing our previous conversation as we looked at the fascinating life of Frederick Douglass. If you missed part one of this series, I want to encourage you to go back and give it a listen as we spoke about Douglass's childhood and his early life experiences. Today, we're going to be looking at the many challenges he faced, as well as how he ultimately made his escape. As I was thinking about today's episode, I started thinking about an experience I had a while back when I was a brand new student ministries pastor years ago. One of the first events I threw for our high schoolers was a cage match dodgeball tournament. And this event is just like it sounds. I ordered some temporary construction fences. I set them up into this decent-sized rectangle with just one way in and one way out. The event overall was a blast. We had music playing, teams were split up into teams, we had a bracket, and overall the night was a hit. Well, at one point during the night, things took a turn for the worse. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed one of my students running towards a small fire pit that we had set up for the event. And I mean, she is intentionally running towards this fire pit. And before I had enough time to say anything, enough time to yell or to say stop or what are you doing, she leaps over and clears the fire pit. And the fact that she clears the fire pit, that's the good part. But then she lands really awkwardly and ends up breaking her leg. And it was one of those things that as soon as she landed, you knew something here is wrong. Now, let me give you a little bit more context. Before me there, lying on the ground, is one of my seniors. She's a star basketball player for her high school, looking at gaining scholarships to play in college, and she's just broken her leg under my watch. Now an ambulance is coming, a fire truck is coming, her parents are on the way. I have 100-plus students and leaders watching all of this unfold in front of us. And at this point in the story, you have to ask, how can things get any worse? And they surely did. Right as the fire truck is coming, the ambulance is pulling up. Here comes my boss to check on to see how my first event is going. He pulls up right behind the fire truck, impeccable timing. He has zero context for what's happened. All he knows is that there is a fire truck and an ambulance parked in front of the church's field during my first high school event. Well, eventually she's taken to the hospital. They fix her leg. She's out of basketball for the season. But the one redeeming aspect of this story for me is that as the dust was settling and we were figuring out what happened and what went on, it turns out that one of my adult leaders who happened to be on staff had dared her to make the jump and also happened to be good friends with the family. So I was kind of off the hook, and both my boss and both the parents were on good terms, and I ended up having a great relationship with that family for the rest of my time in student ministries, as well as with my boss. But as we jump into Douglass's story today, I want to ask a question. Can you think of a time in your life where things got far worse before they got better? And I'm not just talking about just a one-time event like the one I shared just a moment ago, but a season in your life when you felt like you hit rock bottom and you didn't think that you could go any lower, and yet somehow you ended up going even further down, right? These are the moments where we deeply relate to sayings like, when it rains, it pours. And unless you're currently experiencing the worst moment of your life, like right now, we can all relate to a time where we thought things couldn't get any worse, and yet somehow they did. They got way worse before things ever got better. This is Douglass's reality at the point in the story where we're going to jump in today. And my hope is that as you get to hear his story, it will help give you some new perspective on those seasons in life that can oftentimes feel hopeless. Now, at this point in Douglass's story, he's a teenager. And as a teenager, he's sent to live as a field hand to work for a man by the name of Mr. Covey. Mr. Covey was famous in this area for being a slave breaker. In other words, slave owners would send their slaves to this man in order to literally whip their slaves into shape and make them more manageable. If you've ever read any firsthand accounts of the brutality of slavery in America, it's hard to imagine how human beings could be so savage towards another human being. I mean, it's like reading accounts of the Holocaust and asking, how can something like this happen? How can something like this be? The way that human beings were treated, I mean, beaten and abused, whipped until their backs were raw, slashed on their heads until blood poured out, starved and worked beyond exhaustion. And I could go on and on, but these inhumane conditions that are so unfathomable. And this was no less true for Douglas's experiences. One of the interesting things about this experience, though, is that, as is mentioned by people like William Lloyd Garrison and Wendell Phillips, is that when you hear the tragedy of Douglas's story, it's interesting to note that he lived in one of the better regions of the slave world. And yet the cruelties that he and others faced there are still unimaginable. And so as Douglas spent time with Mr. Covey on his plantation, his life was, for a lack of a better word, just pure hell, being worked to the bone with little food or nutrition to sustain him. And it didn't matter how well he or others followed Mr. Covey's commands, because they were often beaten whether they stepped out of line or not. Just brutal conditions. And it makes you think, how much can the human spirit endure in conditions like these? I want to read a passage that illustrates this reality that Douglas found himself in, spending time working under Mr. Covey. He says, "I was somewhat unmanageable when I first went there, but a few months of this discipline tamed me. Mr. Covey succeeded in breaking me. I was broken in body, soul, and spirit. My natural elasticity was crushed. My intellect languished. The disposition to read departed. The cheerful spark that lingered about my eyes died. The dark night of slavery closed in upon me, and behold, a man transformed into a brute." So he explains that living under these inhumane conditions, again, being beaten, whipped, starved, worked to death, eventually broke him mind, body, and spirit. Just imagine for a moment the helplessness he felt in this season. Just pure despair. No longer did he feel human, but simply a brute. This is a moment in his story where, on at least some level, we can relate, because although our circumstances might look different, we've all felt moments of despair. Some people more than others. It's part of the human condition, though. I think about the Psalms in the Old Testament, and you see people there, they're pouring out their hearts before God in despair. You might see or hear it in people's stories, even in our modern day. And these are people you would never have imagined have been through such pain. And yet it's stories like these, stories like Douglas, where we start to realize that there is hope on the other side of despair. That life works in seasons. And although it might feel like the coldest winter, spring is often just around the corner. And so this is no less true for Douglas. In his narrative, Douglas speaks to the beginning of his redemption story as he says, "You have seen a man was made a slave. You shall see how a slave was made a man." So eventually, after being sick and almost beaten to death, Douglas will fight back and rekindle his desire for freedom. He'll decide he would rather be killed than allow himself to be whipped and beaten without a fight. And so after a few run-ins where he does just that, he fights back, he's sent away to live with another master. And it's under this master that he's allowed to gain some new skills and to gain some new freedom. And then he's able to work and make an income. This income he still had to pay to his master, like he didn't get to keep the money. But as he explains, it gave him this sense of freedom that he had never experienced before. And so although his life is much better under this new master than it was under Mr. Covey, he now realizes he's still not free. That the law, that society, they say that he's still owned by another man. And this was true as long as he stayed in the South. And this point actually brings us to the quote of the day. So as always, as I read it, I want you to guess who said it. And this, just to give you a little bit of a hint, this is someone that I've talked about before on the podcast. That's as far as I'll go. But he said this, A man cannot but suffer when his whole life is defined beforehand for him by laws, which he must obey under the threat of punishment, though he does not believe in their wisdom or justice, and often clearly perceives their injustice, cruelty, and artificiality. Take a moment, think about it, guess who said it? If you guess 19th century Russian author Leo Tolstoy, then you are correct. Now, just think about how well this quote defines the life of Douglas and many other slaves during the 1800s. And let me read it again. And thinking about it under that context, a man cannot but suffer when his whole life is defined beforehand for him by laws which he must obey under the threat of punishment, though he does not believe in their wisdom or justice and often clearly perceives their injustice, cruelty, and artificiality. See, as a slave, your whole life was defined by these laws that treated you as a piece of property. And it's hard to blindly follow laws that you know are not good for society. Laws that you know are at the most fundamental level are just unjust. Laws that cause your fellow countrymen to suffer. It's hard to be in a society where you have to follow such laws. And so Douglas, understanding this to be true, finally plans his escape to the North. And I want to talk about his escape. Now, he had a few failed escape attempts in the past, but I want to talk about the final one. In his first narrative he published in 1845, though, he doesn't include many details of how he was able to escape. And this was on purpose. The reason he left out these details is because he wanted to protect those who had helped him to escape. He also didn't originally share this information because he wanted to keep the slave owners in the dark to all of the methods that the slaves and abolitionists used when they were escaping. So it's not until later in 1881, in his narrative, Life and Times of Frederick Douglass, that he actually finally describes in detail how he was able to escape. So with the goal of eventually making it to New York, Douglass borrows a friend's sailor's protection pass. And the way these papers worked was that they created a way to verify a person who held the papers and was a way to make sure that they were indeed a free sailor. The papers had been stamped with an American eagle, which showed the appearance of an authorized document. Douglass had borrowed these papers from a friend who happened to be a free African-American seaman. But the problem for Douglass was that he actually didn't match any of the description of the friend who the papers were meant for. But even so, Douglass planned to use these papers to make his escape. So dressed in his best sailor's uniform, a red shirt, a sailor's hat, and a black cravat tied in sailor's fashion, carelessly and loosely around the neck, he gets ready to board a train. Now imagine at this time, I bet his heart is beating, right? The chance of getting caught and then the consequences for getting caught were severe. The risk is that if anyone looks closely at the papers, Douglass is sure to be caught. And so instead of actually going through the station where they would have to check his papers and do one more verification, what he's going to do is he jumps on a train while it's already moving to avoid the papers being examined. And while sitting on the train, he describes what happens next in his narrative. And I want to read what he writes. On sped the train, and I was well on the way to Havre de Grace before the conductor came into the Negro car to collect tickets and examine the papers of his black passengers. This was a critical, my whole future depended on. The agitated I was while the ceremony was proceeding, but still externally, at least, I was apparently calm and self-possessed. He went on with his duty, examining several colored passengers before reaching me. He was somewhat harsh in tone and peremptory in manner until he reached me, when strangely enough, and to my surprise and relief, his whole manner changed. Seeing that I did not readily produce my free papers as the other colored persons in the car had done, he said to me in a friendly contrast with that observed towards the others, "You have your free papers," to which I answered, "No, sir, I never carry my free papers to sea with me." "But you have something to show that you are a free man, have you not?" "Yes, sir," I answered. "I have a paper with an American eagle on it, and that will carry me round the world." With this, I drew from my deep sailor's pocket my seaman's protection, as before described. The merest glance at the paper satisfied him, and he took my fare and went on about his business. This moment of time was one of the most anxious I ever experienced. Had the conductor looked closely at the paper, he could not have failed to discover that it called for a very different looking person from myself. And in that case, it would have been his duty to arrest me on that instant and send me back to Baltimore from the first station. Wow. Luckily for Douglas, his journey towards freedom didn't end by just simply having the conductor check his papers and be over. The train continued on at a great speed, but for Douglas, it felt like it couldn't move any slower. Douglas explains, minutes were hours and hours were day during this part of my flight. After making his journey on the train, he then had to cross the Susquehanna River by ferry. While on the ferry, someone began asking him all sorts of questions about his journey, where he was heading, when he was coming back, just a friendly passenger that happened to be on the ferry. And diving into all of these details that could essentially have Douglas be found out. Luckily, Douglas breaks away from this whole conversation before he has to reveal any sensitive information that could get him caught. Now, despite the challenges, the many, many challenges he faced on this journey, in less than 24 hours, Douglas is going to arrive safely in New York. Even though Douglas was now on free soil, though, in the eyes of the law, he wasn't yet free. It's not until his friends and his supporters are able to actually raise enough money to purchase his freedom that he's going to become truly free according to the law. Eventually, Douglas will land in New Bedford, Massachusetts, where he will decide to officially change his name to Frederick Douglass. So you might ask, what did Douglas do after he gained all of this freedom? Well, in Massachusetts, he began his journey as a minister. And he's going to use his gifts and his skills and all of his experience as an abolitionist to fight for his brothers and sisters who are still in bondage. With that, we're going to pause today. And as we get ready to wrap up today's episode, another question you might be interested in is, what were Douglas's views on faith, Christianity, and the Christian church, especially after his experience with slavery? And this is a question we're going to be answering on the very next episode, as we finish our final look at Frederick Douglass in this series. We have a lot more episodes coming up that I'm really looking forward to, including this next one as we get to wrap up the life of Frederick Douglass. With that, I hope that you've enjoyed this episode, and I want to remind you to make sure, if you haven't done so already, to subscribe to this podcast, make sure to give it a follow, share it with your friends and family, and if you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, make sure to leave a review. All of this goes a long way. As always, until next time, I want to say thanks for